Welcome to the Infernal Schoolhouse Podcast. Explosions at 5. I'm Brian.
And I'm Aaron.
Plus Sam is back.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to our new mini-series. We'll just sprinkle this in between some episodes. It's how to inhabit the role of... And today we're going to dive into the shadowy world of rogues. Let's start with our personal favorite rascals and reprobates. Tell us who they are, where they hail from, and what elements of the character make them roguey. Who wants to start?
I will start. I'm gonna pick an easy one here, but I love me some Han Solo.
Mm.
And I'm saying, like, you know, New Hope Han Solo, where he just pretty much in cold blood shoots Guido under the table.
It's not Guido, it's Greedo, by the way. This is an Italian thing.
Hey.
Hey, I'm going to show Guido under the table.
Hey, I shot Guido.
Right, the gabagool.
But I really like that character because he is so jaded and such a rascal, if you will. But I think it does this really cool thing at the end of the film when he comes back and rescues everybody. And that is also my favorite argument for not forcing players to play to their alignment. Because it's so gratifying when he actually doesn't. He's not chaotic, you know, neutral. He actually becomes a good guy in the end. And so I think that change is a really awesome and gratifying moment. But yeah, Han's my man.
That's awesome. Well, since you said Han Solo, I'm going to go with a similar style, sort of, kind of action hero, because I think rogues are action heroes for what they do. But I would pick Rick O'Connell from The Mummy. I mean, his whole story starts with him about to be hanged in an Egyptian prison for stealing. And then it kind of just goes from there of him constantly trying to steal things repeatedly over and over again. But on top of that, he's trying to steal things away from bad people near the end. So it's not just all bad things. And he's charming and he's fun and he cracks jokes and he comes up with cool little ways to outwit the other thieves that are there. So there's a lot, I think, to be enjoyed and taken from him. And it's kind of why it's a cult classic, because he really leads that movie as this really fun sort of roguey-like character. I keep saying roguey and I think of pierogies, but I'm just going to stick with rogue. So, what about you, Sam?
All right. Mine is going to be a bit esoteric, but it's Royce. He's from the Rayera series by Michael Sullivan. He's incredibly, it's almost stereotypically roguish. He's dark and mysterious and has a questionable past, but it's just done so perfectly well in my brain that I feel like it's like the epitome of the meme of rogues. He also has a great storyline that comes full circle as well, which I think is also very roguish.
Nice. Nice book recommendation. How many are in that series?
A lot. There's like 2 books in each that got put into like volumes. So there's 6 books that are now 3 volumes that are giant. And then there's a prequel series. And then there's like a prequel series from 1,000 years before. It's a lot.
Good. Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think anyone who's been listening to our podcast for like more than one episode will know that Brian's favorite class is a rogue. And we've also chatted a lot about how character choices can give us a window to reflect on ourselves as well as expand our understanding of others. So what have your thoughts been around rogue as your archetype of choice, Brian?
Okay, so when I role play naturally, I kind of just take my personality and then I just dial it up. So I have this inner voice that is always telling me to do things that I shouldn't do, and often I just discard it. But in role playing rogues, I can just do those things and describe those things as they pop into my head. Often they're terrible ideas and they result in serious harm to me and or my party. But there's just something really gratifying about not holding back. And even famously amongst the three of us, a couple of weeks ago when I tried to play a paladin, it was a pretty damn roguish paladin. And the DM's just looking at me like, what are you doing right now? So yeah, it just feels right to me and it feels liberating and fun to do it. And it just sort of comes to me naturally. So any other role playing requires a little bit of effort and a little bit of forethought. But those roguish elements and those rogue moments just are already in me, just sort of waiting to come out.
Okay. So I've got like an extension question for you. There's a lack of responsibility with rogues inherently, right? And there's not really oversight generally on their interactions with anybody else. with their party or NPCs. And you said sometimes those choices impact you and the people in your party. I know you just kind of mentioned it, but could you give more specific details about like a role-playing tip for how do you kind of, it's such an out of the social norm archetype. Like it's not a person we would really ever run into in the real world unless you're running in like a gang circle.
Yeah, or you're getting robbed or something.
Yeah. So like, how do you bring that in? And I mean, the other part of it too is like, they're kind of chaotic from their job. They're a bit of a lone wolf. How do you narratively tie that in with your adventuring party dynamic? And one thing I was reminded of is when you guys played that game with the Paladin Rogue where you switched, how Aaron was trying to pull things into the storyline using the rogue archetype, but just kind of what ways you attempted to incorporate your rogues into that party setting rather than just being completely idiocentric.
Yeah, for me, I think it's about the backstory, and I think it's about having something that the rogue cares about that could be surprising. And so often it is someone in the party or something in the party. But I think at a certain point, if this is going to be a really fun, gratifying game for everyone, the rogue can't just steal from the party and be a total dick the whole time. There's got to be a compelling reason that this rogue is going to fall into line. And narratively, these can be really exciting, gratifying moments when it's like this little dude that's just doing their own thing suddenly realizes in front of everyone or in a situation what they care about more. And that can be really shocking and really fun to role play. But also it's a moment too where often the rogues are kind of like the punching bag of the party. You know, they're like, well, let him do it. And if he dies, we don't care, or, you know, something like that. But it can also be a moment where you create some bonds with the party. So yeah, I think there's got to be something. You can't create a character that literally doesn't care about anything.
And if I may play my favorite role, which is devil's advocate for a moment, I would challenge you to think about the most famous fictional, non-fictional rogue in all of history. I'll give you a hint. It's part of my wallpaper at the moment, which is that of Robin Hood. And Robin Hood is a rogue, and Robin Hood steals from the rich to give to the poor. So it doesn't always have to be just the sort of edgelordy weirdo who has to just constantly stir shit up somewhere for the sake of stirring shit up. You could actually be somebody who's a thief with a purpose or a reason or a need.
Yeah, and when we were talking right at the top about our favorite rogues, I started thinking about Bilbo Baggins.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's like, he's the nicest guy you could possibly imagine. And he's confused about what he's doing and what's motivating him, but he really doesn't want to hurt anyone.
Oh, yeah.
And he's doing this out of the goodness of his heart, and he's doing his best. So I agree with you. But yeah, I think it's that complexity and sometimes those surprises and twists and turns along the way that can make for a really gratifying role-playing experience that's not so frustrating. Because I think the worst way to play a rogue is they're literally just evil or so neutral that they'll just do anything, steal anything, take anything. I played with a rogue once and they tried to pickpocket Strahd the first time we met him. And it was like, okay, everyone just stood back. Like, okay, let's just let this person die now.
Yeah,
like, that's not fun.
No, not at all.
Ow.
So I guess, Brian, with most characters, rogues often boast roots or lack thereof in various cultures and backgrounds within the D&D universe. How can a player effectively use accents or speech patterns to reflect that path into the shadows?
Yeah, that's fun. I will say for me, I don't tend to do accents as much, but more cadence of speech. And also a little bit more with the way I hold my body and the volume with which I speak. And so I think that can be fun too, to kind of inhabit the character kind of in your body a little bit and do a little bit of acting in your chair and your seat at the table. But I would love to hear if you all have any thoughts on that, because accents for me are really challenging. I famously, when I try to do one accent, someone will misidentify it. Like if I'm trying to do Irish, people think I'm trying to do Chinese. So I really try to stay away from that.
So I think there's a few things here. I guess it depends on the kind of rogue you're going to play, right? I think if you're going to play a rogue more like a Robin Hood, you're going to be a little bit more smarmy, a little bit more like a Errol Flynn sort of character, where you talk with more of the sort of thing, right? Like you're like more of that. But I think rogues don't have to talk in the weird, like, I think that we should go pick his pockets, then stab him in the back. You don't have to talk like that, right? Like you could, like the most unassuming person would be the best rogue. The person who's like, okay, hey, can we just have a quick aside and we have a conversation? Then you're like, what if we took him in the back alley and then slit his throat and took all his money, right?
Exactly. Or even if it was like somebody you'd never think to be like, it's like a housewife, you know? She's just exactly. like out
Like, I'm getting a lot of synergy from this robbery. Yeah. I'm really enjoying it right now.
Guys, we're doing such a great job right now.
What about you, Sam?
I mean, I feel like, yeah, there's a wide range. And I think actually when you were talking about Bilbo, I think for me, it probably comes down to the actions you're having your character do. And with the Bilbo piece of it, rogues almost, they're always, I think it is archetypically against the mainstream society. And so I would say that trying to kind of reflect that shadowy nature it's really not even shadowy necessarily, actually, now that I'm thinking in it more deeply, it's just other, right? It's other than the mainstream. It's against the mainstream. And so it doesn't have to be totally sneaky or any of those things. And it may be, but because it is considered other by most of the people there. And so I actually feel like it's probably going to go more into the actions. And I feel like that shadowy piece of it comes in with your deftness at coming up with plans and not just trying to pickpocket everything, but having interesting plans and some surprises.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, I mean, who's another rogue that people don't commonly associate with being a rogue, right? From fiction, who is a fantastic example is James Bond, right? Mm-hmm. And the most charming person you could possibly imagine who can easily slip somebody poison or steal a detonator or anything else, he's a rogue. He's not anything else beyond that. He's not a paladin. He doesn't give a shit about anything besides himself. He just constantly is trying to, you know, finish a mission, get money, and then bed some weird person named Christmas Jones in a movie, right? He's just like, he's literally a rogue, 100% all the way through. So you don't have to be this weirdness. You could just be like, oh, hello, buddy, Penny. How are you today? You know, like, it's just, you know, all that sort of stuff is very much a part of what it means to be a rogue. The question is, what are your actions? And then what are your motivations, right?
Right. What I am loving right now about this conversation is how many out of the norm rogues we've brought into this conversation, like maybe people you wouldn't have characterized as that. And I'm very excited about it.
Indeed.
Yeah. And so this one, I think for both of you from a DM perspective, what I'm interested in is kind of sort of the fusion of rogue specific mechanics and role play. So I think a lot of the videos that we're going to see out there, how to play a rogue, they're actually going to give you the mechanics. This is how you do the thing. But I'm interested, if either of you have ideas on this, for attaching the mechanics to the role play. Mm-hmm. Thieves can't. Interesting one. Sneak attack, uncanny dodge. You know, it's like some of the things that rogues get or can do. Right. And how can we like fold that into or think about more of a role play dynamic with it?
I think for me as a forever DM is that I always want to find ways to make whatever the action is, even if it's mundane, more relatable and interesting. And so like Thieves Can't is one of those things where I don't want a player just to tell me I do Thieves Can't. That's boring to me. It's boring to me as a DM. It's going to be boring to you as a player. Okay. But if you were to come to me and say, okay, we're in a tavern. I know that from the symbols around the bar that the tavern keeper is in league with the Thieves Guild of the town. So I'm going to order a drink. And then I'm going to just, you know, brush away something from my eyebrow. As he brings me the drink, I'm just going to tap it down a few times. And then I'm going to slide a piece of paper across the table. Say, oh, you know what? I didn't mean to give you that. And then I'm going to put it back in my pocket. And then I'm going to say to the DM what I was trying to say and ask the question of was this, right? Where I'm making it so that the actions make it valuable and exciting. And it doesn't have to just be like, I ask in Thieves Can't, where is the guild? That is boring. Nobody wants to hear that. Nobody cares. Okay. It's stupid. Find a way to make it so that even the most mundane stuff is exciting. Same thing with like if I were to take a sneak attack. I don't want to say like, okay, well, I'd like to roll my 87 D6s and hopefully stab him all the way to death. No, forget that. No, like I leap up from behind the barrel and I jump at him and he doesn't know I'm there. And as in the last moment, he's like turning around and his face is looking at me with this weird pig snarl. And then I stab him in the throat with, you know, my dagger. And then like, okay, well, now roll the damage and see what this does to this weird monster. And then he rolled and is like, oh my God, I cut his head all the way off. But that's exciting, right? That's not boring. So.
Yeah, Aaron, I like that you said that too, because I think often the motivation or what you're trying to do or the description of it for me is way more fun than just, I have sneak attack, right, DM? Okay. And the dice clatter. So I do like that extra effort of here's what I'm trying to do. You see me sneak across the floor and I lunge. And what I'm trying to do is hit him with my dagger. Okay, let's find out if that worked.
Right. Exactly. I mean, go play magic, right? If like, if you want like to not talk about what you're doing, go play a game where you play your trap card, right? Nobody gives a shit. But if you want to sit here and say, okay, well, you know, the dragon's, you know, breathing its fire breath at you, and you're like, well, you know what? As a rogue, I sidestep this and I just kind of roll out of the way. So I'm going to go ahead and use my uncanny dodge to take half the damage of whatever is going to get, right? Make it exciting. It's like, nobody wants to hear about your mechanical BS about how you made this work. Let's make it fun.
Right? There are some people who want that, but I think for the rest of us, it would be nice if we knew what are you actually trying to do. And for me, I think just visual descriptions help too.
Yeah.
What you see now is, or what I'm thinking or feeling is, and describe that, I think that could be a really cool way to connect the dots there.
Agreed. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that I found it interesting that you were like, dual play magic. It really is quite different. And I know there are people who play D&D with that kind of almost like analog step-by-step kind of piece of it. But I do think that incorporating some sort of narrative element to it while you're talking makes it more interesting for other people around you. I also think that when you're playing, especially with Thieves' Cant, I just think it's such an underused mechanic, especially if they're creating something. It kind of depends on your DM if they're willing to help you kind of narratively create your environment.
Yeah.
But the whole purpose of Thieves' Cant is that there is some connection between thieves in this world, that they've come up with this common language. And that could be something like a thieves' guild. It could be something like they have like some thief ruler. I don't know. Like there's a lot of options there that give depth to even just cityscapes or things like that, that I just think is not used very often. I think when it's used, it's sprinkled in, like, because it's helpful, but I think it could have a lot of depth and options with it.
Yeah, I would say, like, especially if you're in an in-person game, I mean, you have such a great opportunity to sit there and pass notes back and forth between you and the DM, or you could sit there as a DM and as the player and just do stupid baseball signs where you like steal third sort of thing, where you just like, and then you hand a little note over and then they write back and they like hand it back over and they do a thing where they're like, oh, let me just wipe this away and then do this. And it's like, that's fun. Like that's fun where it makes sense because people in the room shouldn't know what's going on. You know, it's a little bit different when you're in a virtual environment. And then you're having fun by like, everybody's like, what is happening? Like, I don't get it. Like, why is the bartender like touching his chin so much? I don't understand. And then there's passing back and forth. No, make it fun. Make it funny. Make it interesting. That's the best thing you can do in any game, regardless of whatever sort of class you're playing.
I had a cool experience with Thieves' Cant where I had a player that was having a little trouble with the role play aspect. And so I would describe markings on buildings. And I'd say, you know, so our rogue over here sees there's this blue inverted triangle on this building. And then I'd have him roll for it. And then if he rolled high enough, I'd be like, okay, so you actually speak this language and you are able to divine that this is a safe hideout for the guild or whatever. So I think there are some cool ways where even as DMs, we can feed the players a little something and allow them to get into it, because you feel special if you speak Elvish or if you have dark vision or something like that. So it's like, it could be one of those things as well.
Yeah, I agree.
So as we've been talking, quite a bit of a rogue's depth specifically comes from backstory or their reasoning that pushes them to be outside of the societal norm. For D&D specifically, the archetypes lend to those kind of benefits that you get when you're playing like the basics of Thief, Assassin, and Arcane Trickster. But they came out with a lot more in some of the expansions. What are some of the like archetypes you tend to go towards, Brian? And why did you choose those when you were creating your characters?
I mean, I love it all. But I will say, I think Arcane Trickster is fun. Because it allows you to, in a role play way as much as mechanically, allows you to kind of lean in on some really crazy stuff that you're going to try to pull. And I think in this way, it gives the party a cool option aside from send the tank through the front door or, you know, kill all the guards. Because if we're thinking about, you know, trickery and tomfoolery, and I'm going to disguise myself as this, and I'm going to role play with some, you know, cantaloupes in my shirt, and I'm going to try to, you know, so it can be really fun. And then in that way, I think the rogue can end up being, you know, some comic relief. But often if you roll well enough and you role play well enough, you can actually get out of some really gnarly stuff and maybe completely sidestep an entire combat and just get what you need and just walk out, and maybe everyone just goes and has a beer.
That's great. I don't know why, like, when you talk about the cantaloupe part, I just had that moment of The Simpsons where Abraham Simpson's probably making a bullshit about his time in the military, and he's talking about being behind the front lines of World War II, about like doing like a USO tour for the Nazis, and he's dressed up as a woman, like doing provocative dances. And he has like a coconut that falls out of his bra, and some German's like, ah, that's not a booby. But I would agree with you, though. I think Arcane Trickster is an amazing one to play because I think it takes you out of your comfort zone. And I think that any sort of, you know, like Assassin and Thief are great. And a lot of the other ones that they do list and a lot of the other expansions are a lot of fun. But find something where it's difficult to play, where you're not just picking something because it's, I mean, we all know how much I feel about min-maxing, but pick something where it's not just about the rolling of the dice, but it's about making the game fun for everyone, including yourself. And, or if you are going to play like an assassin, make it fun. Like who's a really good assassin rogue, right? Is Wesley from Princess Bride, right? He understands how to poison somebody. He has built up a tolerance to poison. You can even talk with your DM and say, look, I carry around this poison all the time, but I have a tolerance to it. And I just want to like randomly poison.
Iocane powder.
Exactly. Right. And that's fun. Like nobody thinks about just like what makes it work. They just think about how I roll the dice. And if that's all you're worried about, then you're just going to be disappointed because all those ones are going to stack up and you're like, wow, I really wish I did a backstory on
this. Yeah, you're right. The people who do play in that way take it disproportionately hard when they roll poorly.
Yes. Agreed.
Also, I just want to give a shout out to Bugs Bunny as my favorite cross-dressing rogue.
That is true. He does an amazing job many different times. And Elmer falls for it every time.
Every time. It's just a...
Oh, Elmer's into it, man. I think Elmer looks forward to it.
I think Bugs might have a way to die rolling that 20 all the time over there.
That's right. So, Brian, in moments of conflict or tension, a character's true nature is often revealed. What are some habits or reactions unique to rogues that players can use to showcase their character's flaws and maybe possibly their hidden virtues?
Yeah, so I gave that example about Han Solo, you know, at the end, like acting against type. But I think thinking about, okay, so I took a screenwriting class once, and one of the most powerful things that was said to us was when you're writing dialogue, don't think of dialogue as communication, think of it as behavior. Mm. And often humans, yeah, and we'll say by extension, elves and halflings and dragonborn, they don't say exactly what they mean. And so if you can think about what does this character actually want, versus what is this character's presentation? And then you can get into some really more complex psychological scenarios where maybe you find a moment for your character to truly reveal their desire, mm-hmm, what they actually want, whether it's through dialogue or even better through action. And I particularly am fond of the idea that there's something that this character cares about more than themselves. And I think those are really touching moments when someone is, whether or not they have to, willing to die for a thing, for a goal, or for another person. And I think, mm-hmm, those can be like amazing role-playing moments.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's good to think about not just your class, but also the race of your character as well. So if you're, for example, a hobbit rogue, why? Why are you a hobbit rogue? It's one thing that you want to play it because you like the idea of re-rolling ones, again, min-maxing, don't care. But why does Bilbo become a rogue? Why does Bilbo go do that, right? Or why would a dwarf be a rogue? Why does that make any sense whatsoever from
a... Or why would a Goliath be a rogue?
Exactly, right? So take those questions. And when I say that, I don't mean don't play those characters. Play them, but know why you're playing them. And then once you know yourself, you can know how to play. And I think that's important for anybody like embodying any character in any of these things.
All right. Moral quandaries pop up all the time in role-playing games for everyone. But how can a player, specifically a rogue, use those moments to deepen that character's personal story, maybe through an internal monologue or some intense, unexpected action? And I think this ties in really well to what you were just talking about with kind of utilizing speech as almost a cover, and sometimes like they're not always saying exactly what they want. Sometimes they may be hinting at things that you don't notice until later. But I just thought it might kind of fit here to ask, how exactly do you use that kind of internal monologue or action to show your rogue's depth?
I love that one. For me, I think the first thing that came to mind is this idea of the rogue is often going to be the one that's going to be asked to do the morally reprehensible thing. You know, like if we've decided this bad thing has to happen, you'd think that your rogue is probably the most emotionally resonant. No, not resonant. What's the word?
Resilient.
Resilient. Yes. That your rogue is the most emotionally resilient. But I love this idea that maybe they're not, and maybe they suffer. Maybe just in role play, you know, your DM may be like, okay, you know, you guys are able to, you know, do this, your rogue, you know, off this person. And then they're like, okay, a bit in the morning. I think you could even be like, wait, DM, my character was plagued with brutal nightmares. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, or you see them like the next day, they're riding out of town and they're just like tears streaming down their face or something like that. You know what I mean? To try to like give some complexity. And maybe even in that moment, you don't know exactly what it is, but I think that's cool and more realistic, right? Like if you think of the meanest, nastiest bully that you've ever met, they probably had these really tender moments where you could see their humanity kind of, you know, be apparent through all of it. And so I think that could be a really fun way to do that.
Yeah, I agree. And I apologize because the more we talk, the more I keep getting film references and film rogues in my head.
That's my favorite thing.
I actually think we should share as many references and film rogues as we can, because I think what it's doing for me is expanding my definition and mental schema of rogues.
That's awesome. So I just thought of another one that probably wouldn't have popped into anyone's head. And that, along with that question, is Vincent Vega from Pulp Fiction.
Nice.
Okay. And so Vincent Vega accidentally blows a man's head off in the back seat of a car. And so I like this idea of somebody who's constantly causing pain on accident and then kind of feels both bad and not bad at the same time. They have a defensive barrier up of, oops, didn't mean to stab that guard in the neck. I was just trying to subdue him, but then things kind of got out of control, right? And so I think that's a big way of not just the murder hobo sort of stereotype, but an accidental or a reluctant murder hobo. The person is like, I really didn't want to.
Reluctant murder hobo.
I should get that tattooed on my shoulder, I think.
Yeah, but like this guy just jumped onto my rapier 12 times. I don't know if that'll happen.
But same thing, like actually, you know, shot somebody with a nickel plated 45 in the back of a car while you're having a conversation with him. And it's like, that's kind of what it's like to be a rogue. Sometimes it's challenging. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's a moral quandary. Sometimes it's just, this is Thursday, right? And I...
100%. Okay, so let's talk about appearance of rogues. Mm-hmm. So I think, Sam, you've been mentioning a couple of times like the archetype. So I think if we think about the archetype of a rogue, there's a certain picture we'll all probably get, which is like they've got a cloak. Their face is, you know, covered in shadow. But I want to talk about, in the same vein we've been going with here, what are some other ways that we could think about the appearance of a rogue? How would you describe them? How do you see them?
Okay. My connection to this right now is the mundane and monster of the week. Mm-hmm. I feel like someone that is mundane and normal and generally would not have any, even a glance cast upon them. So very nondescript. Would be a very interesting rogue. And Aaron hit on that a little bit earlier, but I've kind of been noodling on that. The housewife rogue sounds really interesting to me. Because if there's somebody who's not noticed, then yes. They're the best for that job.
Wait, Sam, you just made me think of this. And this is definitely not going to be a rogue thing, but it is a filmic reference. So hopefully I'll get points with Aaron.
Okay.
But the original Friday the 13th. The camera is the killer for a lot of the movie, and everyone is just so damn yielding and trusting of whoever this person is. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out it's like a soccer mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know, I apologize, Sam, if you had more to say on that, but I was just going to totally agree with you because I think that we get it wrong with rogues. I say we in the pejorative sense from a majority of people who play them. You don't show up into a Like if you imagine like what you consider a rogue now, right? Somebody in a balaclava and dark clothes. If they were to go into your bar, right, and be like, "Oh yeah, can I get a beer?" I'm like, "Don't serve that guy." What
yeah,
is
it's like
what
going
is
into
that?
A, like, no. It's like going into a what? Jewelry store with a ski mask on.
Exactly, like, not like a balaclava, a good idea. Right? Like, no, thank you, not at all. And so, like, I think a real rogue would dress like a normal person and then just keep the stuff in the bag that they would change into later, right? Or something where it would be easily changeable. Like you have a cloak, but it's brown. It doesn't be black or black right. clothing. It just has to blend with darkness a little bit because it's medieval times. They maybe have a torch, but more than likely it's moonlight, baby. And if there's no moonlight, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. You can wear a white shirt outside. People aren't going to see you, right?
A rogue that wears a neon jumper.
That's true. The best rogue is the one that nobody suspects is a rogue, right? It'd be better if you dressed up as an old woman and just walked into a bar. They'd be like,
or
oh,
even
wow.
better, you just were an old woman.
Exactly, like right? They would have no idea. And I think that's great. That's the same thing with Gandalf. Gandalf looks like a super powerful, roided out angel because that's what he is. And he's like, but he turns himself into an old man because it's deceptive and it makes humans understand him more. That's what he looks like because that's what he wants to be seen as.
That's super interesting. I'm now just thinking, where did that archetype come from? And my guess is it probably came from, because now we think of rogues as like a very fun class to play, but probably that archetype of rogue came from an intentional portrayal of evil, effectively, like a very obvious portrayal of negative or bad. And then we've slowly changed it over. But realistically, or exactly as Aaron said, a real rogue would not wear all black and look super sus at all times. Like, that's not going to be helpful to you.
That's right. Or, you know, like I could be pronouncing this wrong, and I apologize, but a really good rogue is from the original Conan movie, which I don't know that you've seen, Sam, but his cohort, his partner in crime, Conan's partner in crime. And Conan is a rogue in that movie, by the way, but which is also weird as a barbarian. But Subotai is his cohort, and he just wears brown leather armor. It's, you know, it's like sleeveless. He can get into places easily because he's not wearing actual proper metal armor. He can get up and down. He can blend in pretty easily, and he can escape when he needs to. That's what a rogue is. A rogue doesn't have to look like, you know, a spy versus spy character. It's even better if like the party doesn't even know who you are. If you're doing a session zero, nobody knows each other's classes, and you're like, oh, I just look like a nobleman. And they'll just assume he's a nobleman, right? And it's fun when the nobleman starts, you know, stealing things. I don't know. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, it's like in modern day, the people who perpetrate Ponzi schemes.
Yes.
You know, they're just like very nondescript, trusting people who are just taking billions of dollars from people with a big fat smile on their face.
That's right.
I was just thinking choosing to imitate a class that would generally be beyond reproach, kind of similarly, like maybe dressing as a druid. But that's not even close to what you are. So this kind of this fake persona that puts you beyond most people having any kind of suspicion of you, not just not looking interesting, but going the complete opposite direction and trying to push that kind of what you were saying, like those Ponzi scheme people, like this trust through that, that visual representation.
I just had to look up the name, but Anna Sorokin, she was this young girl who just passed herself off as a billionaire heiress.
Yes.
And she would just go into hotels and just check in and just hang out. And she had everybody fooled.
Yep.
And it was the same thing where it's like, she just was this
real
like
life
a,
rogue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. And maybe I could see myself just spiraling down this rabbit hole. Right. But even just like what Sam was saying, it's like dressing like a cleric. And then you find out where the Mark's house is. And then you go there at night, everybody's asleep. You take off the cleric outfit and put on the rogue outfit and you break into their house, right? That sort of stuff where that makes sense. So before I go too into the weeds here, how do we think a rogue relaxes or unwinds given their already unfettered natures? Are there like any leisure activities or hobbies a rogue might engage in that players can use to kind of add like a layer of acting to their character? You know, I'm like maybe more of a contradictory interest, like a deep appreciation of stained glass windows or something that like kind of silly that balances their day to day.
That was the first place that my mind went to, was something really counterintuitive. And maybe they wouldn't even want everyone to know that, right? Like if it was that stained glass window appreciation, I don't think they'd be like, well, friends, I'm going to go clean the blood off and then I'm going to go, you know. But also, I think it's affinity for small, tender things, perhaps.
Yes.
Like maybe they feed the pigeons in the park or just do something where you're like, what? I just saw you murder half the town's guard, and now you're caring for snakes, or you have a pet mouse or something like that.
And now you just baked a plate of cookies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, or you're into baking. Something like that, I think, is a really fun, gratifying role play moment, mm-hmm. which will make sure that your fellow players understand the depth and complexity of your character.
Yeah, I agree. So like, you know, Minsk, have you ever seen Minsk the character before? He's a D&D character. He's been in several Baldur's Gate games, but he's just this bald, almost like a, how would I describe him? He's like a Drax sort of character, very dumb kind of, but he has a hamster that he carries with him called Boo. And so he always talks to the hamster for everything. And he cares for this thing. It's like this little, just tiny, and you would love this, Brian, by the way, but it's this tiny hamster named Boo. And whenever he's like getting into a battle, he's like, go for the eyes, Boo, or whatever else. He's just like, but yes. It's just this idea of like this very gruff, sort of dumb murderer being like, I love a hamster. And it's amazing.
I mean, I think that mirrors real life quite a bit. Most of us don't have hobbies that directly align with our day-to-day jobs.
That is true.
So I feel like for a rogue, like it would kind of suck to just be constantly in that negative headspace, even if it is your job all the time. So finding something that brought you some joy that was like alternative. Like,
yeah, if your day job is murder and mayhem, it'd be weird if you're like, yeah, thanks guys. Have a great day. I'm going to go murder a couple more people before bed.
Right. Just for fun.
No, you're going to sew.
Or you're like the Johnny Appleseed of rogues, where you're carrying around saplings and you're like, well,
plant some trees. I'm going to offset the life I've taken today.
I want a rogue that quilts on the side.
Ooh, I like this.
Really, really amazing quilts.
Or crochets booties for the random babies they come across.
This conversation has really, even as the resident rogue expert, apparently, this has really expanded my mind about all the possibilities. And I think that, not that there's anything wrong with the archetype, the stereotypes, but it's so rich and such fertile ground to go outside of that, maybe even exact opposite of that, and come up with a really fun opportunity to role play a rogue.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited for future rogues.
Amen. Well, dear friends, we hope you enjoyed the start of our How to Inhabit the Role of series. Please let us know if you feel extremely connected to a specific class and would like to come on and chat about it with us. And as always, thank you for spending time with us this week. Please check us out on our Instagram or at our website, infernalschoolhouse.com. Oh, and we sell stuff on Etsy too.
As a reminder, we are now live streaming our Monster of the Week campaign on Twitch. You can watch our bi-weekly live episodes at twitch.tv/infernalschoolhouse with our next release coming out on April 29th. Those only stick around for 7 days on Twitch, so catch our past episodes at youtube.com/@infernalschoolhouse.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, all.